since we're not going to be speaking directly about the Soviet Union, but more about the crisis that is engulfing the Middle East and the world and its impact on the United States, the Middle East, and the Soviet Union. My guest is Mansour Hekmat, and he is a founder of the Iranian Communist Party, which should not be confused with the Iranian Tudeh Communist Party, the section, let's say, of the Third International that's allied with the Soviet Union. This is something quite independent. And Mansour is speaking to us from his place in exile. He does not live in Iran. Welcome to Portraits of the USSR, Mansour.
Thank you very much.
I'd like for our listeners, if you could give some background to the crisis in the Gulf, perhaps elaborating how it came out of the Iran-Iraq war.
I'm not sure it came directly out of the Iran-Iraq war. I think probably the Iraqi military forces, or the war machine as they call it, was prepared during that war, but the event itself, I don't think, came out of that situation as such. I think it's more the case that the whole global situation, and especially the period that we're entering now, the post-Cold War period, created an atmosphere that that military machine could be used in such a way. I don't think it had a direct connection to the Iran-Iraq war, or is in any way a continuation of it.
But how do you see Iraq's action against Kuwait? Was this because their economy was in such desperate shape after the war, and they needed to ensure that the price of oil was up?
I think there are a whole list of arguments analyzing the Iraqi action and incentives in doing so, and I don't think I can add anything to it. I think the economy was one question, the fact that Iraq owed a lot of money, and the fact that it needed a lot more too for economic reconstruction. The fact that Kuwait was, as Iraqi government said, overproducing oil and therefore undercutting the price of oil. All these things, I think, were part of the calculation, yes. But there are also other elements on the Iraqi side. I think the need for the emergence of some kind of a pole within the Arab world. And the fact that Iraq coming out of the Iran-Iraq war and having stopped the pan-Islamic onslaught was in a good position to fill that gap. These are factors which I think contributed to this action.
What about Iran? How is this crisis going to affect Iran's role both in the Middle East and in the world and I guess with the United States as well? How will Iran come out of this crisis?
I think it, on the whole, it will push Iran as a totality more towards the West, contrary to what some people may think. I think it wouldn't ally itself to Iraq in a confrontation with the U.S. I think it creates a situation also that would be more convenient for the Iranian government to make such a turn. But that is for the government as a whole. I think some factions within the Iranian government would also turn in the opposite direction. On the whole, I think that is the general picture.
But do you think that that this will have when you say that it'll push Iran more to the West, and I think I agree with you there, are you saying that this might change the nature of the government itself and the personnel, or you'll see the present people who are in the leadership in Iran moving toward the West and moderating their stance toward the West?
I think the general situation is that the Rafsanjani faction is getting more in charge of the situation now. And the shift towards the West wouldn't entail a change in the complexion of the Iranian regime. I don't think so. I think that the Rafsanjani faction would strengthen its position and would have a freer hand in suppressing the Hezbollah faction, the pan-Islamic faction. I don't think that structural changes are to come about as a result of this situation per se.
How has Iran emerged from the Iran-Iraq war, and what state is the country economically?
That is the main area there. One can say it didn't come out very well from the Iran-Iraq war. In the beginning, when the war actually ended, or the ceasefire was declared, Khomeini declared that Iran is also prepared to accept the United Nations resolution. At that point, there were hopes among the population that there may exist some kind of stability and some kind of normalization of relations with the West that would allow economic reconstruction to take place. That didn't materialize, basically because the Hezbollah faction, the Pan-Islamic faction, was too strong to allow such a course to be taken. And for any economic improvement on the part of the Rafsanjani faction was made dependent on the suppression or at least curtailment of the Pan-Islamic faction, which has taken so long already. The economic situation is really bad in the country, as far as my information indicates. There is no sign of this getting better, unless the last 2 months with the higher oil revenues, unless there is some change there. Up to 2 months ago, there was no sign of any improvement in material standards of living.
Well, what about as a result of the war itself? How much of Iran's economic infrastructure was destroyed in the war?
To the extent that it was the oil industry, I think very much of it. I can't put a figure on it.
Uh-huh.
But the whole refineries, ports, and pipelines were destroyed in the south. But I don't think that other infrastructure was damaged in any serious way within the Iranian territory, deep inside. I don't think so. The problem was always raw materials and intermediate capital goods that used to be imported on a large scale, and not just because of the war, because of the isolation of the Iranian government, they could not be imported any longer. So many of the factories and many economic units are working much below capacity. Probably 30-35% of the productive capacity is utilized. And that's the major problem, not the actual physical damage done to the economy.
What about what public political position has Iran adopted vis-a-vis the crisis in the Gulf?
It shifted a long time, also, and it also varies according to the faction which is having the microphone. It shifted from total support of the U.S. side, more or less total support of the U.S. side. It shifted gradually to some kind of middle of the road position, in which there's also condemnation of the U.S. and a certain level of cooperation with Iraq in allowing commodities to cross the border and so on.
But what?
So
excuse me, how does Iran stand to gain from this crisis, you know, from being seen as the country in the region that perhaps is closer to the United States, that will gain from producing more oil and selling it? And then perhaps, will it come out as the regional leader again, as it was, in a sense, during the period of the Shah?
To answer the second part of your question, I would say no.
Okay.
Not come out as a regional leader as such, because it is worn out as a military force in the area. It doesn't have sufficient ideological framework for such a regional role. I don't think Islamic fundamentalism or any kind of watered-down Islamism can be used for such a regional role. It appears that nationalism would be a better vehicle for any force which is supposed to perform that role, and Islam doesn't appear to be a proper ideological framework for that. Politically, the government doesn't have that backing and that legitimacy inside Iran to allow it to perform this role. how Iran is going to gain, I would say, basically, in terms of the normalization of relations with the West. And when I say Iran, I mean the regime installed installed in Iran. I don't mean Iran as a country or the people, but the government in Iran, the Islamic Republic as such, will benefit in the sense that, firstly, it will have its normalized relations with the West, and it's already happened with Britain. That would allow some kind of international help and also access to world market for productive goods. And secondly, it would also benefit financially by producing oil, larger quantities of oil at higher prices. I think these are the main two factors which would help the Iranian government.
You mentioned that Iranian Islamic government cannot be used as a tool in a sense that the way that previous government has, or even as the way nationalism could be used. Is Islamism becoming a spent force in Iran? How much internal support is there for the Islamic regime?
I think the Islamic trend was Islamism was spent within the Iranian context a long time ago. I think a great deal of the West's conceptions and also propaganda about the Islamic nature of the Iranian society was exaggerated, and the support that the people were supposedly giving the regime, that was exaggerated from much earlier on. But the cause was alive in the context of the Middle East as a whole, in a broader context. And I think with the events now, with the crisis that is existing in the Middle East now, it is also spent within the Middle Eastern context too. I think that Arab nationalism, which will have Islam as a secondary element within it, would be a much more powerful mobilizing force for the population there.
But what will that do to Iran that you're talking about in the Middle East as a whole? Will that have the tendency to isolate Iran more within the Middle East?
Within the Middle East, I think so, yes.
So
the Middle East and within the Islamic world, so-called, yes.
Well, that certainly does sort of give us a new panorama of the region. So you feel that Iran is going to be pushed more toward the West and Arab nationalism will be more of the focus in the Middle East?
Yes, exactly. That's what I think.
What do you think that's going to do internally? Now, I know because you've mentioned that the West has had a sort of propaganda coup in trying to demonstrate that the Iranian masses support this Islamic fundamentalism, and you're saying that that's not true. And I suppose if anyone were to look more closely at the situation and just see the amount of force that has had to be used within the society, that things are not so rosy as they pretend. What is the internal situation in Iran? Is this government illegitimate? Does it have any support? Do they have to use the secret police massively?
You see, the problem is that we have a population in a state of desperation, and one must to some extent try to learn the mechanisms of mass thinking and mass psychology. People would not object to the government in a very active way because they're so desperate. If you remember, the revolution against the Shah was made in a period where there was a great deal of savings, for example, within the working classes. Standards of living were high, and people could fight and also take the economic burden with it. Nowadays, there's such economic desperation that people are pushed towards being more conservative politically, minding their own business, trying not to lose what they have. To that extent, the regime doesn't rest on a turmoil. To that extent, it is safe because there is not only there is no political opposition organized inside the country, any active political opposition that would endanger them as a whole system, but there are also people are conservative in terms of political change, and they look up towards international forces, towards international camps, towards international relations for a solution to their problem. the average Iranian, I think, while knowing that the ideals, his ideals or his or her ideals are different, still would wish for Western influence and for Western pressure on the Iranian regime. They wouldn't mind it now. However, they might be anti-imperialist, so-called, in their minds, or however they might be dissatisfied with what the West is doing in the area, or what the Shah used to do as an agent, as an pro-Western element there. However it may be the case, they are in such a state of desperation that they, I think the major concern would be stability and investment and jobs and lower inflation and so on. It is a society down on its knees, and as such, I think the Iranian regime can last longer. And if the situation in the Middle East gets worse, or if the war comes about, or if there are political pressures on the Iranian government, then we may find another condition altogether, because this dissatisfaction and this desperation could also turn into some kind of a mass protest. But this is not what's happening now. Right now, I think people are more resigned politically, and think more in terms of themselves and their families and the economic survival.
So in a sense, what you're outlining is the politics of despair and defeat, and it looks like the Khomeini was able to inflict a larger defeat on the Iranian working class than the Shah was.
I think so, yes. So, I think so, exactly.
But do you think that the workers themselves see themselves as having been better off materially under the Shah?
Yeah, sure.
So, this leads to another question, and that is, because of the changes in the world over the last year, in which communism, so-called communism, as it existed in the so-called socialist world, has been defeated ideologically, and what we're seeing throughout the world is this sort of born-again marketeerism. Does that have some currency in Iran as well? Do you think that workers there see no alternative to the politics of capitalism and the ideology of the market?
You must remember that in many third world countries, also in Iran, socialism and communism, the official communism that was part of the political structure, did not have its base and its support among the working classes or the labor movement as such. It was a movement based on the intellectual element in the society, on the intelligentsia, and that base has been alienated from socialism or communism in general. I should say that, yes. But the working class was more or less unaffected by communism either way, either by the mainstream or the so-called communism of the Poles, of the Soviet bloc and the Chinese and so on, or by the radical left that existed during the revolution. So the workers have been more or less aloof from the fate of communism as a tradition and as a movement. It is only now that they are beginning to be introduced to some kind of working class and working class communism, to some kind of workers-oriented socialism, and the propaganda and agitation that goes within the class over the question of socialism is much more intense than it was, say, 15 years ago. So the Iranian working class is not part of the disillusioned population of the world with regard to socialism and communism. The intelligentsia has definitely broken away from it, and that's, I think, a major development.
Is that widespread, too, among the many organizations of the left?
I think the organizations of the left are redefining themselves in a very conservative way, according to the law of the averages. They just see what the market rate is for socialism, and they just take position according to that. I'm talking about organizations other than the Communist Party, which I'm speaking on its behalf. The Iranian left, the radical left, the intelligentsia-based radical left, is very much now into Gorbachevism, into all the fashionable trends that goes inside European
post-Marxism
that is making it, merging it with the democratic idea of making it human, or rethinking the communism in more or less the same along the more or less the same lines as is happening in Europe. That is the case there. But on other poles, us for example, we represent a kind of shift towards more orthodox and classical Marxism, and towards a sort of labor-oriented, worker-oriented socialism.
But what's interesting about what you're saying? I'm sorry. Just
carry on.
What's interested about what you, what I'm interested in what you're saying is that that the left in Iran and in, I guess by extension, other third world countries never concerned themselves much with working class politics. Is that because these countries are newly industrializing and there is a new working class now that has become a political actor? Or for what reason do you base it on, perhaps the guidelines of the old Comintern? What is the reason for that?
I think both it has both a local and regional basis, as well as a global and international basis, this shift away from the working class, away from working class politics, and away from working class socialism. I think globally it began with the fact that at some point in the history of communism, a national interest was made the main focus of contemporary communism of that time, and that is building the Soviet economy and building the Soviet society, and I think there was a great element of nationalism introduced into socialist movement, which was itself a wedge that allowed it to separate itself from working class socialism in capitalist societies of the West. But there is also a regional element. If you see then that we, after that development in the Soviet Union, we have Maoism, which is itself a crystallization of non-working class socialism. It's a sort of facade for some kind of peasant movement, attempts to for nation building and independence and so on. And you see a nation, a national movement presenting itself with a Marxist or semi-Marxist language, or within a Marxist guise. So I think if you see that the within the international context itself, you have a move away from working class politics. Within the West itself, you have the student socialism of the 60s, which I don't think had any much to do with the working class socialism and working class protest, working class social protest. So I think that was an international trend. But within countries of the third world, those ideas were picked up as forms of protest by the intelligentsia. As far as I can read within Iranian history, Iranian socialism has been a product of the Iranian educated layers and the intelligentsia. So it is true that within the Iranian context, the fact that the Iranian working class is young, and probably 3-4 decades we have them in any very considerable size, That has contributed, but it has only reinforced an international trend, I think. It's not a uniquely third world concept.
But so you have a fairly young working class that has grown up in one regime after another that is universally repressive, even though, as you say, it's become worse in a sense. They at least were able to combat more effectively for their own standard of living under the Shah than under the present regime, and then an ideological climate which pretty much ignores them. What is going on now in the Iranian working class?
Let's just go back to your question for a minute, because
okay.
I thought you said that the working class came more strongly during the Shah's regime in terms of economic struggle. That's probably that's what I meant. The actual economic mechanisms, the actual market, and the fact that there were quite a great deal of oil revenues there allowed a degree of full employment and therefore higher levels of wages and so on then. But the protest, working class as a protesting class, as an active class, you can observe this more after the revolution than before it. That's one point. The other, I think I lost track of the rest of the question.
Well, basically, I'm trying to get you to give us a sort of panorama of the political struggle as it exists for the working class today in Iran.
Yeah, I can just sum it up in sum up the 10 years after the revolution for you in a few sentences, probably. The first period we have is the period of anti-Shah struggle. And there we have the working class as a very active element, especially the oil industry workers. And along with that movement, which was the core of the anti-Shah movement, we also have a great deal of illusions and false hopes in relation to the Islamic forces, which showed itself after these forces came to power. It took about 2 or 3 years for the Iranian working class to realize that the struggle against Shah represented a combination of forces which did not necessarily have common interests. And it took some time for the Iranian working class to move as a class or as a mass movement against the new regime. And there we see them only in very economic capacity. We see them in movements which are basically economical in their demands and in their action, which is fair enough. Political opposition to the government from the working class has not materialized as such. And also the ideological shift within the working class towards socialism is something newer. It probably dates back 5 years now. That there's a great element of socialist penetration of socialist ideas within the rank of active worker militants. Before that, we could say that the Islamic tendency had the upper hand even within the class, as far as the class's thinking and approach to the questions were concerned.
But this shift towards socialist ideas among the more active layers in the working class, isn't there a tension developing then, let's say, between that current of thought and the more generalized prevailing current in the world, which is moving away from socialist politics? Well, I'm talking about the whole influence of the market.
I could say that there is, to some extent. I can't just measure them. Actually judge which current is going to be the dominant one within the Iranian working class. But a considerable number of circles within the working class movement who are actually shifting towards some kind of criticism, socialism as a whole. You can see that due to the fact that a great number of books are published on the subject. More or less everything which is published in Europe on criticizing socialism or socialist history or socialist economics is translated and printed in Iran. And there's a great deal of talk about socialism from a critical point of view, whereas Marxist books or pro-socialist books are banned and people who distribute them or sell them or read them are persecuted. So I have come across circles and individuals within the militant layers of the Iranian working class that have sympathy towards some kind of criticism of socialism, and they may form a kind of basis for a new liberal laborist trend within the Iranian working class. But that can only be serious if that laborist and reformist liberal tradition may present itself as an alternative to the regime as a whole. They won't actually shift towards that line, which we can probably see in Europe more, unless it can provide some kind of alternative to the government. Whereas the radical socialist tendency does not have that problem. They accept it as an opposition and join it as an opposition current, and that's why the picture may be distorted for the moment. But if there is a political breakthrough in Iran, if there is some kind of a democratic situation, then we can judge which of the currents within the working class movement are stronger, a liberal reformist line, more or less modernizing, or pro-modernization line or a radical socialist line.
Okay, I'd like to let the listeners know that you're listening to KPFK Los Angeles. The program is Portraits of the USSR, and I'm Susie Wiseman. My guest today by telephone is Mansour Hekmat. He is a founding member of the Iranian Communist Party and a member of its leadership. That is not the same Communist Party as the traditional one allied with the Soviet Union. It is, and Mansour is speaking to us from his place in exile, as it's still a very dangerous occupation to be a left-wing communist in Iran, as in many places. And I've been we've been discussing the situation in the Gulf and how it, and then moving more toward the internal situation in Iran. And I'd like to just switch it just a little bit back to talking about what you see, what you think this crisis in the Gulf will lead to with respect to Iran's role in the Middle East, and also how the changes in the Soviet Union, what kind of changed relationship will Iran have with the Soviet Union?
I think we discussed more or less the first part of the question in relation to what role Iran will find itself in following this crisis. I think that very much depends on the course of the crisis itself. We didn't get to talk about the nature of this crisis or its future yet.
I think go ahead.
If the war breaks in the region, I think that would be the worst scenario for the Iranian government. I think that would lead to a disintegration of the Islamic Republic also, along with many other regimes in the region. And I think the whole region would be swallowed into kind of a decade of turmoil and change. And that would be a very difficult situation for the Islamic Republic. If there a political solution is found, and if Iraq is given some concessions and situation calms down, then I think Iran on the whole has gained economically to some extent and has lost a great deal of prestige within its own constituency, that is the so-called Islamic world and even the Islamic fundamentalist trend. I think Iran is going to be a secondary force in the region if the situation evolves peacefully.
But what do you mean that it's lost? Why has it lost its position with regard to Islamic fundamentalism in the region?
I think the essence of this movement, Islamic fundamentalism, is anti-communism in the expressed in along with anti-Americanism. And if you just look at the situation now, it is Arab nationalism that is mobilizing and taking advantage of the anti-American sentiments in the Middle East. And I think it is already clear that the Hezbollah in the Middle East and also in Europe, to the extent that the mosques and Muslims can be found there, are shifting their allegiance to some extent towards Iraq, or at least are being critical of the dominant trend within the Iranian government, that is the Rafsanjani line, as a conciliatory line towards the U.S. So I think this is a crisis for pan-Islamism and for any government or any regime based on it.
But is this?
Secondly, I think yes.
No. Yeah. Well, it's just interesting because are you trying to outline the crisis as one a sort of rivalry between pan-Islamism and pan-Arabism?
You mean the crisis in the Gulf?
Yes.
No, I outline it as something which revolves around the USA and its role in the post-Cold War period, but we never got to talk about that. I don't think it's a regional problem at all. I don't think it's a regional crisis, and I don't think it concerns the question of occupation of Kuwait so much. Perhaps the first two or three days, that was the issue in the Middle East. Right now, I think that single act of occupation triggered a global crisis in the context of the post-Cold War power structure of the world. And I think the situation now has nothing to do anymore with the regional forces or regional tendencies. I think it's more can be better understood if one looks at the position that the USA would find itself, was going to find itself within the post-Cold War period. I think that is the main issue in the Middle East now. Not the Arab world or not Kuwait as such.
I think that's very good. So in a sense, you see it as a kind of last gasp of a declining power, the United States, to reassert itself in the world through this crisis?
I definitely do. I think there was a great deal of confusion in relation to what's going to happen to the U.S. given the breakdown of the Soviet bloc, given the German unity. And there was a great deal of confusion surrounding the concept of NATO. And this opportunity has been created for America, and I think America has also partly made it for itself to reassert its position and to gain a role in the future world, the post Eastern Bloc world. So, I think that's the main issue here.
So the real question was not how do you see Iran and Iraq emerging from this crisis, but how do you see the United States emerging from this crisis?
I think so. Yes.
But what about, this is a little bit, perhaps I shouldn't bring it in the last 4 minutes of the program, but what do you think this will do to the role of Israel in the Middle East?
I think they're going to be the next loser, along with Iran. They're going to be the major losers politically in the situation. If the war breaks out, I think you're not going to see a peaceful Israel anymore, which is not peaceful now already anyway. I think that the whole fate of Israel will be thrown into the question, along with the fate of many other regimes in the region. If the war breaks out, I think it's going to be a two-decade issue with lots of forces getting involved and forces actually transforming into other things as we go along. And Israel would be the main loser as a state, as a government, as a Jewish state as such.
If Israel is the main loser, who do you see is coming out the best in this crisis? That's kind of asking you to look in a crystal ball, but how do you see
it's going to come the best?
How do you see the outcome?
Crisis.
Yeah, how do you see the outcome of the crisis? Let's say that if it does go into an actual armed conflict of long duration.
Yeah, I don't see any winner. I don't see anybody winning in this situation. I think it's going to be a genocide in the region. It's going to affect the whole world. I think it's going to reverse the whole developments that we've been witnessing during the last 5-6 years. I think it's going to even affect the balance of forces within the between the factions within the USSR. I think if a war breaks out, the Gorbachev line, let alone the Yeltsin line in the Soviet Union, is going to be under a lot of pressure. And new forces will develop even in Eastern Europe. So I don't see any winner. I think that people are going to be suffer a lot in terms of lives and hardships. And I don't see any force emerging as a victorious force. As socialists, we are going to be losers too, because for years we're going to be dominated by false ideologies, nationalism, religious ideologies, patriotism, and the confrontation of social forces, which I would say are historically obsolete and redundant and defunct. I think they're going to come to the fore again. They're going to take the scene, and they're going to overshadow the real problems of the world today. Which I think is basically around wage labor, private property, and real human emancipation. I think they're going to be overshadowed in the whole world as such.
By this rising nationalism, I think you're right that it'll put a great deal of pressure on Gorbachev, and if anything, it could strengthen the hand of the obscurantist nationalist forces there. What I mean by that is they're anti-Semitic and inward-looking and pan-Slavic, if anything. Do you have anything finally to say, perhaps on a more hopeful note?
Well, I only wish that the American public opinion would be more critical of what it's fed in terms of analysis and even information. That's the only hope. As long as the American population actually buys the kind of propaganda or the kind of false information or half-truth that it is fed, I don't see any real way out of this situation. I think probably the condition there, I haven't been there recently, probably the condition there is such is very much close to the period when America was beginning to go into Vietnam. And I think people can learn from history, and they can prevent such a thing happen again.
Okay, thank you very much. My guest today has been Mansour Hekmat. He's been speaking to us from his place in exile. He is a founder of the Iranian Communist Party and a member of its current leadership. And we've been discussing, sort of in a wide-ranging way, the Persian Gulf crisis, its impact on Iran and Iraq and the United States, and also the internal situation in Iran. And it's been a very illuminating and interesting discussion. I'd like to thank you very much for being my guest today on Portraits of the USSR.